12. We're going to be reading from there in just a minute as we study the story of Herod and the occasion when he attempted to steal God's glory. Our lesson text is from Acts chapter 12, verses 18 through 23. Let me take just a minute to sort of set the stage for what we're about to read. Acts chapter 12 tells of Herod's efforts to persecute the church, and in so doing, he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword, and he saw that it pleased the leaders of the Jews greatly. Therefore, he proceeded to arrest Peter also, and he put Peter in prison or in jail, intending to execute Peter, but because it was near the feast day, he decided to wait until after the festivities. And you remember the Lord sent an angel who delivered Peter from prison the night before Herod was intending to execute him. We take up reading at verse 18, which says, "Now when day came," which would have been Peter's day of execution, "there was no little disturbance among the soldiers over what had become of Peter. And after Herod searched for him and did not find him, he examined the sentries and ordered that they should be put to death. Then he went down from Judea to Caesarea and spent some time there." We don't know exactly how much time passed between the end of verse 19 and the beginning of verse 20. It's probably not a terribly long time, but we're still talking about the same character when we take up in verse 20. "Now Herod was angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and they came to him with one accord, having persuaded Blastus, the king's chamberlain. They asked for peace because their country depended on the king's country for food. On an appointed day, Herod put on his royal robes, took his seat upon the throne, and delivered an oration to them, and the people were shouting, 'The voice of a God and not of a man.' Immediately, an angel of the Lord struck him down because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and breathed his last." The sordid story of the Herod family is a fascinating story. It's a story that covers many, many decades of Bible time. It began actually in the intertestamental period before the New Testament time began, and the end of the story of the Herods, for all practical purposes, ends with the conclusion of the book of Acts. The story of the Herod family is a story that's full of conspiracy, treason, immorality and incest and treachery and all kinds of bad things. But who are we talking about when we say Herod? The proper name Herod is used 31 times in the King James translation of the New Testament. But all 31 times are not referring to one man. In fact, there were 6 different Herods. And many times in the New Testament story, they're not really identified in a way that's easy to, at a quick glance, tell who we're talking about. And so whenever it just mentions Herod in passing, as it does here in verse 20, "Now Herod was angry with Tyre and Sidon," you got to take a minute to figure out which Herod this was and who we're talking about. In all, there were 10 different members of the Herod family that are part of the New Testament story. On Wednesday night, we've been studying a series of lessons entitled Bible Answer. No, Bible, I can't even think of the name of the series. Bible Questions. That's what he thinks. That sounds good to me. We're answering questions that are seldom asked in the Bible. Anyway, We've touched on the Herods just a little bit and have observed the fact that it is one of the confusing things in the New Testament if you don't take a few minutes to do a little research and figure out who some of these personalities were. There were six prominent kings or tetrarchs who went by the name of Herod. They were appointed by the Roman government to rule over various parts of the area of Palestine. Out of those six rulers, the Herod of our text that we just read here in Acts chapter 12 is actually the next to the last one in the series of characters. And the most interesting thing about all of these characters is that not a single one of them is mentioned in any kind of really positive light in the story of the New Testament. In fact, most of them are mentioned singularly for the sake of the negative impact that they had on certain biblical characters. So I want us to take just a couple of minutes here and run down the list of those six Herods and kind of figure out who they are and what kind of guys we're talking about here. And then I think we'll have a little bit better understanding of the text that we just read here in Acts chapter 12. Herod the Great was the first of the Herods. He is best known as the Herod who asked the wise men who were in search of Jesus to come back once they had found Jesus and tell him where Jesus was so that he could go and worship him. And of course, we know that he didn't want to worship Jesus. He wanted to kill him. The Bible in Matthew chapter 2 tells us how that Herod was angry when the wise men didn't come back and he realized that they had not done what he asked them to. And so he issued a decree and put to death all of the male children of the region of Bethlehem who were under 2 years old. He reigned for 37 years. He was most remembered in his day for rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem that had been ravaged and destroyed during the intertestamental period. Let me read to you some comments that came from a book and a subsequent sermon that give us a little bit better understanding of Herod the Great, because this was the big daddy of all of the Herods. They all came from him, and so when we understand what kind of fella he was, we'll have a little bit better handle on all of the rest of them. Herod was not a nice guy. His family life was a mess. He was married 10 or 11 times. Scholars are not exactly sure how many. He had at least 43 children. He had only one wife that he really loved. Her name was Miriam. He married her when she was 15 and she had 5 children in 7 years. Then Herod decided that he couldn't fully trust her loyalty, so he had her executed, the only wife that he ever really loved. Actually, he wasn't very sure about her mother either, so he had his mother-in-law executed. There were 2 of his sons that he thought were a little bit too ambitious, and he wasn't real comfortable with that. And so he had those 2 sons executed because he thought they might want to take over from him before he was ready. When he was close to dying, about 5 days before he died, another of his sons appeared to be trying to take over a little too quickly, and so he had him executed as well. As Herod was on his deathbed, he realized that because he was not all that highly favored, when he died, he would not be mourned. And so he sent out and had dozens of the most influential citizens of Israel imprisoned in Jericho. He left the standing order that when he died, they were to be executed as well, so that the people in Israel would cry on the day that he died, even though he knew that no one would be crying for him. That's the kind of fellow Herod the Great was. When Herod the Great died, his throne was then given to his son, Herod Archelaus. Herod Archelaus is the reason why Mary and Joseph were afraid to go back to Judea with the little boy Jesus after having hidden in Egypt while Herod the Great killed all of the baby boys. When Herod the Great died, God gave Joseph a message to go back home. But before arriving in Judea, they found out that Archelaus was in power instead of his father. And because of his reputation, they settled in Nazareth instead of going back to Judea, therefore fulfilling the prophecy that was made by the prophet Jeremiah that Jesus would be called a Nazarene. Herod Philip was another son of Herod the Great. He's mentioned only briefly, and he's only mentioned because he was the original husband of the wife of Herodias, who happened to be the daughter of his own half-brother. Herodias, you remember, was taken away from Herod Philip by one of his other half-brothers, and the occasion of that brought forth the condemnation from John the Baptizer, saying that it was not lawful for him to have his brother Philip's wife, and therefore John was put in prison. That's the only reference to Herod Philip. Matthew chapter 14, verse 3. Herod Antipas was another of the sons of Herod the Great. He was the one who had John the Baptizer beheaded at the request of Salome. Remember, Salome was the daughter of Herodias, who danced before Herod and so pleased him that he promised her whatever she would ask for, up to half of his kingdom. When she consulted her mother, who dearly hated John the Baptizer because of his criticism of the entire marital situation there, her mother advised her to ask for the head of John on a platter. And immediately Herod was sorry that he had made that promise to her, but true to his word, he sent to prison and had John beheaded, and his head was delivered to Salome on a platter. Shortly after this, we find Herod once again, Herod Antipas, coming into view. He was the Herod to whom Pilate sent Jesus on the night before he was crucified, because Herod had some authority in that area and Pilate wanted to show some deference to Herod, and Herod had made the statement that he had never met Jesus. Herod had heard about Jesus, and Herod actually at one time thought that Jesus must be John having come back to life, because obviously his conscience bothered him for having John put to death. Shortly after Jesus' appearance before Herod Antipas, he was accused of treason against Rome and was banished to the region of the world that was then referred to as Gaul, which is present-day France, Belgium, and northern Italy. Herod Antipas died in exile. Shortly after he was banished to Gaul, his nephew came to the throne, Herod Agrippa the First. Herod Agrippa I dearly hated his uncle and had actually testified against him in Rome in the trial of treason. He saw great personal advantage for himself in cultivating the relationship with Rome, and in so doing, in persecuting Christianity. Herod Agrippa I is the Herod of the text that we just read, Acts chapter 12. Herod Agrippa II was the son of Herod Agrippa I. This is the last Herod recorded in the New Testament. This is the King Agrippa before whom Paul appeared in Acts chapters 25 and 26. It was this man, King Herod Agrippa II, who said to Paul after a discussion of spiritual matters, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." Agrippa, you may recall, was accompanied by a woman that everyone considered to be his wife. Her name was Bernice. They lived together and conducted themselves as husband and wife, even though Bernice was actually his sister. His other sister, Drusilla, was married to the Roman governor Felix, who also appears in those late chapters of the book of Acts. It was Felix, you remember, who trembled after Paul reasoned with him of righteousness, temperance, and the judgment to come in Acts chapter 24, verse 25. Now, with that conglomeration of historical background, I want us to focus in on this occasion here that's recorded in Acts chapter 12 as Herod attempts to steal the glory of God. There are four points that I want us to look at very quickly. First of all, there was a grand reception. This reception is apparently held for Herod by his subjects from the cities of Tyre and Sidon. They had fallen out of favor with him. Luke records the fact that Herod was very angry with them, but they had, through apparently bribing his chamberlain, Blastus, sought to regain their favor with Herod because their region depended upon Herod and his kingdom for a great deal of their economic success and actually survival. Luke records in the text that we just read a few minutes ago that Herod put on his royal robes for this occasion. The historian Josephus records that Herod's royal robe was made almost entirely of silver, and it shone brilliantly in the morning sun. Though it was not uncommon for rulers to dress in an extravagant way, Herod's reputation was that he believed that no expense should ever be spared for himself, especially when it came to his royal attire. Herod gave a grand speech. Luke simply states in verse 21 that Herod delivered an oration to them. I believe it's significant that not a single word of that speech has been preserved in history, either inspired history of the Bible or uninspired history. The speech has not survived. Nobody knows what Herod said. In view of the entire context of this story, I believe that fact alone is a very powerful lesson. You'd think that something that he said that must have been so outrageously great would have been recorded. Not a single word has survived of that speech. At the conclusion of that speech, Luke says that the people gave a great shout. In fact, verse 22, he says, "And the people were shouting the voice of a God and not of a man." Poor, foolish Herod. blinded by his own sense of self-worth and encouraged by these people who were simply in the business of trying to pacify a ruler that had been angry with them. Flattery is a very dangerous thing. Someone has said that the mind of man is a sponge for flattery. I think that's true. Amazing things have resulted from that kind of deception. Flattery is usually a lie. If flattery is not an outright lie in its actual words, the presentation of the words in order to be classified as flattery are given or made in an artificial way. The wise man said in Proverbs 28, verse 23, "Whoever rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue." The final thing that is pointed out in this text is the grand exposure. Herod has gone down in history, not in a way that I'm sure he would want to be remembered. Rather, as long as God's word stands and circulates, Herod will be remembered as a man who died while trying to take God's glory. Obviously, to fail to take the right action, or to fail to speak the right words, sometimes bears the same blame as actually doing the wrong thing or saying the wrong thing. Herod is a case in point of the folly of allowing a lie to go uncorrected. Position, power, splendor, wealth, an earthly throne, and so many other things of this very same nature are pictured here in their true worth. They're only a flimsy covering for the real man. They don't keep out the weather. They don't keep out disease. They don't shield the conscience, the heart, or the body. And they certainly don't keep God out, even for a moment. Jesus said in Luke chapter 18, verse 14, "For everyone who exalts himself shall be humbled. He that humbleth himself shall be exalted." It's interesting that the words of the ancient historian Josephus have survived in telling about this account. Though Luke does not need Josephus's verification, their accounts are startlingly similar. Here's what Josephus wrote. "When Agrippa had reigned 3 years over Judea, he exhibited shows in honor of Caesar, and on the second day of which shows, he put on a garment made wholly of silver, truly wonderful, and came into the theater early in the morning, the silver of his garment reflecting the sun's rays, spreading a horror over those that looked. His flatterers cried from one place and another that he was a god, adding, 'Be merciful to us, for although we have hitherto reverenced thee only as a man, yet shall we henceforth own thee as superior to mortal nature.'" Josephus then says, "Presently, a severe pain arose in his belly and began in a most violent manner. And Herod said, I, whom you call a god, am presently commanded to depart this life. I am bound to accept what providence allots. The account that Josephus writes is understandable. The account which the Holy Spirit inspired Luke to record includes the inside information. The information that Josephus, being uninspired, did not have access to. And so Luke fills in the blanks and leaves no question as to exactly what was the cause of Herod's death and why he died. Herod's a very interesting character, as were all of those others of his family. A lot of very important lessons. It's always important for us to remember who we are in respect to who God is, and that we make our very highest priority pleasing God and living our lives in a way to give glory to Him. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand together and sing.